Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security. So today, you know, running solo, really wanted to review a few elements. And one of the elements that is going to be part of a continuous assessment is core principles of cybersecurity and project management. Now, I'm going down this path because really looking at the current state of, let's say, modern project management, as well as the security needs matched to business objectives respectfully as part of the project, are elements where I want to assess certain challenges. You know, does this get into scope creep? There's an evolving threat over necessarily the life of a project. And where do we integrate compliance into this overall posture of a project as it comes, you know, basically from the development stage all the way through to its operationalization? And so I think in certain areas, we need to address risk, but we have to do this in really every aspect of business. And here I pointed out because there is such a great volume of material on project management risk and risk-based approaches within a project that I think there's also elements where we can necessarily connect the dots between cybersecurity risk assessment and project risk assessment, especially when we've got to start integrating elements of them both together. Right. So we'll prioritize. We can use, you know, either qualitative approaches, quantitative. You know, we've done a lot of work on quantitative risk on the podcast and with respective white papers and all, as well as a CISRAM approach to the implementation of controls and burden and element of that that space has us really considering an approach where we want to look and address certain categorizations of risk within a respective project. Okay, so let's decompartmentalize necessarily project management and cybersecurity integration. So I'm looking at where cybersecurity, necessarily information security, the parenthetics of what we respectfully must understand and implement within the phases of respective projects. So we'll take a risk-based approach. We'll identify certain categories. And one I like to start with, and I think is quite apt, are the pillars of zero trust. Now, I'm not saying this is, you know, the implementation of zero trust, but when you do go down that path, every project representatively is a sub-project of a zero trust implementation. Zero trust is never done, but needs to be started respectfully. And so we'll look at, you know, respectfully those five pillars of identity, user, application, the network, and respectfully the data. And I think utilizing each one of those subcomponents helps us necessarily contextualize the project at hand. Therefore, we can apply appropriate cybersecurity risk elements to that project through those respective contextual lenses of those elements. So I like moving down that path. Now, we will get into certain philosophies of project management, and we're going to have to address certain challenges that we see both in waterfall and in agile approaches. So when we're thinking of the assessment and addressing the waterfall process, so, you know, instantiate respective sections of certain projects that are controlled, very structural, but over time, it doesn't allow for the adaption of change necessarily, nor with longer stage processes, the requirements that come from compliance frameworks, regulatory, certain threat elements, all have an element of change. Right, this velocity that we need to understand and integrate over time. Now, does that mean that agile is the appropriate approach and the better alignment? In some cases, yes, but not in all cases. When I'm thinking of agile, I really you know, think toward the DevSecOps approaches of certain capability. But when we go into project management, I want to get into with Agile continuous security testing. So Agile through an iterative approach, you know, constantly building and improving upon what was respectfully in the backlog and within the respective sprint that's happening over a 2 to 4 week period, again, depending on your application, is we want to look at assessing security with that as well as taking non-functional requirement and applying those as part of a change management process. This helps integration, so maybe more fairly aligns with the velocity, but in some cases, over time, as we iterate through the implementation of new functionality, new capability, there is new conceptualization of what security conditions are required when that new function is added. So again, let's go back to the zero trust principles. We'll take those five as an overlay, respectfully, in the Agile approach, and necessarily tune the risk to what has been developed. Are we adding new functionality? Are we adding more users? Are we adding a new capability of identity and access management as part of this continuous implementation of the iterative approach of Agile program management? We also have to respect, whenever we talk project management, there's two principles that at least I've learned through the Project Management Institute and the work that I've done, is it's all about communication, and you don't forget your stakeholders, respectfully. No matter the project, there is always stakeholders. There's always a need to get feedback into that respective program. Now, I look at multiple stakeholders, both on internal projects and those outwardly facing. With respect to products and services we provide, got to understand both our compliance requirement, the underlying infrastructure, executive, project owners, program owners, and all, I mean, and then our external stakeholders, obviously, as consumers of the respective service. There has to be an engagement, but also a collection and management of that information. As part of that, too, again, I did mention compliance. Got to have our GRC folks as part of this approach so that they understand necessarily the condition of their respective project and program, as well as its development over time. Now, whether that's waterfall, whether it's agile, or any, you know, with the parenthetics underneath the agile banner, it's still required for us to be part of those programs and not necessarily, and we hear it so many times, right? It's either we're going to cut testing time to make up for issues in terms of scheduling an estimation that we had earlier in the project or program, or it's we're going to bring in security late to the game, and necessarily we can't have an influence over necessarily those five pillars or really the risk assessment of the underlying project itself. So these are concepts that I'm, you know, want to bring to the table. Again, I don't think I'm saying anything new. Maybe just aligning a couple points together that we may not have thought before, or that we just need to rememorialize necessarily in our understanding of application of cybersecurity to project management. So let's get into some of the you know, common challenges that we have, and scope creep becomes one where, you know, necessarily we have a dynamicism with respect to cybersecurity. But ultimately, we're trying to react to current threat while also trying to maintain a status quo with necessarily project evolution, especially in an iterative approach. So it gives us an opportunity to, one, understand both scope creep, making sure that we have a contextual lens focused on respectfully the project, but also the changing threat environment. We can't forget that that has to be, in some cases, a stakeholder to what we're trying to do as an organization. So that project necessarily has the threat environment to be aware of as part of this element of non-functional requirement collection, gathering, and disposition to where I think one of the areas, and again, a challenge that I'm going to say, and I just mentioned, you know, project management is all about communication. The form of that communication is so important. I think there is, and you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast, but there is a difference between cybersecurity professional to cybersecurity professional communication, as well as cybersecurity to executive. There is also a differential between cybersecurity comms and project management. Has to be put in a way that can be consumed as either a user story or put as part of something that is tangible with respect to the program or the project itself. That has to be communicated in such a way that can be consumed and, again, memorialized as part of the project management program. Now, we come into other elements of change, right? Our regulatory and compliance, in a lot of cases, these are not based on velocity. It's based on awareness that we now, as let's say we're utilizing data from a respective country, there could be conditions on its use. And as we integrate that as part of iterative deployment across the globe in terms of a project, program, or service, we have to be aware of how that respective compliance is needed to be enforced as part of the deployment of our program. That could have massive connotation in terms of the way we're controlling, managing, and storing, respectfully, that data, and how we necessarily inform our stakeholders in this space, external stakeholders, on how we're utilizing that data, right? You know, privacy policies, privacy notices, et cetera, all aligning to certain regulatory control. Now, the reason I say the velocity is not necessarily at the pace that you would see in our threat environment is we see awareness over time, right? There's implementations of certain regulatory control that happen years and, you know, go into effect with, you know, you've got years to prepare. And usually you'll see with either NIST standards or ISO 27001 as a security ISMS capability, changes in that space are not every year. They happen, you know, over a period of, you know, 5 to 6 years. Maybe that velocity will increase just based on our environment changing so much. But that's the kind of cadence that we see because they have to go through necessarily their reviews internally, externally, peer review, making sure that everything aligns to a community and a consensus-based approach, which is great. But again, that doesn't add to the velocity. So it's not necessarily these changes are going to be, oh, we're unaware. It's our due diligence necessarily as professionals to be aware of what's coming down the pipe that we can then provide that feedback respectfully to our organizations, whether in a project or operationalized, potentially there could be an impact to its operation. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Don't know how to meet the standard of reasonable cybersecurity? Well, you won't get there by putting a fancy lock on the server room door.
Right, Sean. CIS Secure Suite comes with integrated tools and resources for implementing a reasonable cyber defense program.
Now, let's not forget about testing. You can also use a CIS Secure Suite membership to evaluate the reasonableness of your cyber defenses using risk quantification.
And this will help you to comply with U.S. and state data privacy laws and show you've implemented the necessary security measures to avoid liability in the event of a data breach.
And now through April 30th, you can save up to 20% on a new membership using promo code RCD25.
So, want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Well, you need a CIS Secure Suite membership to build and test it.
Visit cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite to learn more.
Thank you, and let's jump back into the episode. And we also look at prioritization. And I mentioned this from a resource perspective. So we can look at scope, time, and necessarily resources as being the triangle, as it were, of project management. And resources in our space are very, very important, especially from a cybersecurity perspective, because we have to have the timing and the resources available. Now, the one I like to use in this area is when we see and we'll use critical path analysis just as an example. We see a change in kind of, you know, the development stage, the design, the requirements gathering that affect then development, that then affect testing, that then affect deployment, that has the representative domino effect. Now, we could have project plans in play. I assign a resource for this particular month to do penetration testing as part of the go, no-go decision, respectfully, part of a security assessment, whatever it happens to be. But if that gets shifted, necessarily that penetration tester is not just waiting for projects to become available, right? We've got certain time and delineation And that has a knock-on effect. And respectfully, it could be, well, Sean, be more agile, right? Utilize that as an estimate, but build in buffer necessarily to the scheduling. Very difficult to do when you've got, resources, either internal or external, from a penetration testing perspective, that are either waiting for the actualization of their stage within the respective project plan to be shifted or moved. Not always conducive. And so it's, trying to balance all of these pitfalls, as it were, together requires due diligence, right? The quicker we can be aware of a change in the overall timeline, we want to be able to provide that necessarily to our teams and adjust where we can. Now, we think of really best practices in this space, and we want to have resilience. And this is what I'll call an embedding approach. It's not just, oh, it's good to have, or it's something we should be doing. It kind of gets into the element of shift left. And we've seen this, with deployment of certain applications, that we want to shift responsibility left so that we're not left necessarily as end users with vulnerability. We want to shift left, so we're not left. We shift left for respectfully the organization to take responsibility in the space. Now, I also consider that part of the cybersecurity project management element to bring awareness and the vigor of assessment and control in that area so that it is part of the planning process. It is part of the development, and that security is staged all the way through. That gets very, I'm talking very waterfall terms here, but agile is really the same. Every iteration necessarily should complement the resiliency. And respectfully, as we go through the testing, we want to, static, dynamic testing. We want deployment testing. Respectfully, the underlying infrastructure configuration assessment, continuous monitoring from a security perspective in terms of deployment, and looking at respectfully these through the environment lifecycle. So a dev, a QA to prod being, one of the most simplest archetypes there. But we need to do that because respectfully, it's a responsibility. We need to be aware and speak in project terms. And again, I know it's, Sean, respectfully, as cybersecurity professionals, we've got enough acronyms to deal with without adding project management into ours as well. But if we're going to have an effect on shift left and getting this earlier into programs and processes, again, it's a communication element. Now, respectfully, from the project management perspective, there is a need to understand that as a stakeholder in this entire program, we should be consulted, right? In fact, do we have any respective responsibility? We'll use RACI terms in this area to contribute to the overall success of that. Absolutely, we do. But we've got to be engaged early enough that we have an influence. It can't be a reaction. We need to be proactive in this space. Now, one of the things that can help us, and again, I'm throwing out a lot of the things, but these are points that I've used in the past, is that I like to work with project management on the risks. Now, not just cybersecurity risk, but entire project risk. Again, Sean, we've got enough risks to deal with in cybersecurity. I don't want to add, business processes and things to that. But respectfully, from a cybersecurity perspective, we should understand those. We should have enough of, let's say, an ability to address those certain risks, maybe not at an expert level, but addressing those because respectfully, as our implementation of a new capability, whether internally or externally, is going to be operationalized at some point with this project, right? That needs to be brought into our business impact analysis, disaster recovery, all of these other tenets of cybersecurity. So why not get into necessarily this early so that we know the effect it's going to have on our policies, our program, our underlying procedure, criticality analysis, all of these things. So doing that, I find, and having that high-level holistic risk approach helps understand and be able to discuss certain capabilities, certain actions we need to take earlier in the project. Now, we'll move on to another element as well. And I've mentioned continuous monitoring, but I love a metric. I'm data-driven. We all should be. And I want to have elements of reporting in this space. Now, want to look at how are we going to measure success in this area. Now, I could say through a DevSecOps process is reduce vulnerability, time to detect a vulnerability, and that is in a respective, and I'll call the infinity loop if you've ever seen the DevOps respective diagrams that usually represented as a kind of an infinity symbol. I call it the infinity loop. So we add security to that as well. That's good. We need to be tracking certain elements of both the development and operationalization of both the code and the underlying infrastructure, again, depending on the context of the respective project. And we want to assess over time how is our influence or adding the sec to DevSecOps having a positive return on investment. We can do that in certain ways of one, identifying issues early. We can detect our response strategies, our ability to monitor and understand whether or not resilience is baked in or was an afterthought and a bolt-on, which obviously I don't want, but it happens. As we go down these paths, I think it's, you know, one of those elements that is cultural. It gets to that cultural element because not everybody necessarily thinks the way we do, right? In certain cases. And the way I'm mentioning this is I feel that any cybersecurity professional should be very much in the mind of the red teamer, right? The adversary effect of thinking that way can help necessarily as defend it, you know, from a blue perspective. Now, whether there's a combination of purple, as attack, defense, and we go through certain exercises in that space, looking at those pillars, how those pillars with respect to the technology, the code, the implementation, and the deployment could necessarily be abstracted and attacked. Again, it's a fair exercise, but we've got to think about resources in this space. Depends on the project, right? Depends on the monetary investment, depends on the return on investment of going through such a process. Is our time best spent with this particular project or with another? And we've got to kind of do value chain analysis. Where's an hour, respectfully, of that type of analysis worth with respect to certain projects and programs? There may be some that have critical value that we need to address early, that we need this type of veracity in terms of red team assessment and understanding all the potential issues that could necessarily affect this particular project. So I use those. I know these are terms that we're maybe throwing around, but really getting and building this into a cultural approach to identify resilience early, understand holistic risk of respective projects, bringing in that business risk from when this is operationalized and moving that earlier in the program, I think pays dividends. In my perspective, and obviously I'm going to be a little biased because obviously I want to integrate cybersecurity everywhere. It's part of what I do, is that we can necessarily build these wins. And the reason I say it's building wins and where we're seeing a positive effect, it may take investment in terms of time and resources, but we see that positive effect further down the line, is that I think that transitions between two elements. And those two elements, one is successfully we've been able to build and deploy a program that we've assessed and tested. The other element, though, that is a little, I don't know if it's controversial, but I'll throw it out there, is the effect of not doing this would obviously not be seen. We're not going to see this particular project, the program, service, whatever it is being developed, attacked, made vulnerable, those vulnerabilities exploited. We're not going to see that risk actualize. And so in some cases, you may have this effect of our success necessarily is not leading towards, we just did it, deployed, and no big deal. You know, there was no issue. But, well, let me go back to a return on security investment. If this did happen, these are the consequences. And I don't know that that gets communicated as often as it should, because it's, you did your job, cybersecurity, you protected us, great. But it doesn't necessarily have that positive effect of saying, look at this, you know, we put a few, half a day extra time in doing this work, doing a penetration test, doing this type of assessment that now saved us X amount of dollars for the system not being vulnerable or susceptible to these types of attacks. And so I always go back and we, you know, thinking about that return on security investment, how important a metric that is, because it's a great value communication. And again, it's part of that value chain where it's, where is the best security return on security investment utilized with respect to projects, as we can identify those that have either greater vulnerability, higher level of data classification, greater number of users. Again, you define the metric. It's all going to be contextualized based on your use case. Now, again, I don't know that I can have a podcast without me mentioning an ability to address AI, AI components, AI projects now, automation into this assessment. I'm going to use it in two veins, right? So if we're developing AI as part of the project, that's, you know, the context of the project, certain conditions and controls we need in that space, right? That there's potentially, some will say it's, you're looking at the same thing, still a system, still processing zeros and ones. It's, you know, just a state machine and kind of move on. I think there is a different element though, when we start to integrate AI and the utility, because there are different testing strategies and respectfully a different approach that we need to test, both from a cybersecurity perspective and a holistic risk and resiliency perspective when AI is in the fold, right? Decision-making, traceability of those decisions, transparency in those decisions, logging those decisions are all elements now that respectfully have to be addressed and part of the program. And again, it's not where, and I'll get into this. Well, let me hit this point really quick. Now, you may say, well, you know, some of those AI components are not strictly cybersecurity focused. Cybersecurity may be having some responsibility in that space, but, you know, we could look at AI developers, AI implementers, some project owners in terms of AI with respect to those types of controls. That, whose responsibility does that become? And I think, you know, I want to be in the conversation, at least. Want to provide a perspective. Want to take a look at certain NIST risk AI frameworks, right? Have that as part of the backup strategy that I want to use to exemplify that there are new conditions of control that we need to assess. Now, alternatively, there are AI-driven tooling that we can put into play, as well as automation, as part of the process of building resiliency and assessing over time. I think that's wonderful. You know, everything is becoming AI-enabled. Matter of, you know, just where we are in terms of the AI age. And we see that each part of our respective program, the underlying infrastructure, is also being augmented, right? So, you know, AI bots necessarily for code analysis. Wonderful. Can we do an assessment of security in there? Is it, you know, AI driven that we can do a review? All good. You know, we do automation in terms of CI/CD deployments, respectfully, through the infinity loop with DevOps. We throw sec in the middle as respectfully. It's not a boundary either. I don't know if some people represent that it is dev now separated by sec and then combined with ops. It's an enabler, the way it should be. Now, again, you may have your own experiences in terms of how security influences on your DevOps programs, but they should be an enabler for greater confidence and resiliency of what we're building and deploying, you know, on this iterative and continuous basis. So automation comes into play, scanning, assessment, code review, testing analysis, testing results, triggering events, event management, deployment strategies. You know, all of the tooling basically is supporting some type of capability with automation. Now, whether that's functionality in terms of cloud environments or whether or not it's assessed as part of the delivery mechanisms of what we're tracing through both versioning all the way through deployment. Again, depends on the flavors that you're using within your environment, depends on the maturity scale of integrating AI and automation into those respective programs, and necessarily seeing those results. The one thing that I do caveat, and we'll finish with this particular point before I jump into just some final thoughts, is it's not just about being AI enabled, it's about being AI responsible. Everybody's moving towards an AI capability. necessarily is that market forces driving us that way before necessarily we use market share or we impede our ability to grow as an organization because we don't have AI. But I think there needs to be a reasoned use case for its implementation, one that provides and generates value, not one that puts an organization necessarily at risk because of the implementation of an AI capability. Now, again, there could be use cases, there could be poster childs of AI just enabled for a certain search functionality that then had cause for vulnerability, exposure, exfil, improper use, etc. Again, we can necessarily apply our five layers from the zero trust on top of these elements and look at the effect AI may have on each. But ultimately, it's all about business value, right? Business operations, aligning projects to value generation, allowing security to build resiliency, to create that return on investment, to continue to support that business value. So we move away. Again, I appreciate the time. We're looking at risk-based prioritization. We're looking at adaptability. We're looking at modern program management techniques, project management techniques, how those integrate over time, how we integrate and build a practice, representatively a culture. So with that, we'll conclude the episode. Again, I'm looking for questions, concerns, issues that you've had, thoughts about the topic that I'm discussing today, and your perspective. So podcast@cisecurity.org. Now, I want you to subscribe to the podcast really in all the usual ways. I also want to let you know that we're on YouTube at The CI Security. So make sure to click subscribe, hit that notification bell so you're always aware of when we release a new episode. And new episodes are released every Wednesday, so you can expect this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.